American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, the Hyundai Insta wins a big award. Next-gen Jeep Compass launching, and the new Nissan Juke leans on Renault to keep the price low. Plus, stay tuned, because later in the show, I'll tell you how you can avoid long waits at fast chargers over the Easter holiday with some tips from GridServe. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. This is your trusted source of EV information. It is Saturday, 19th of April. I'm Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. Patreon supporters can strip out the ads. Maybe that's an option that you'd like to do. A little bonus, a time saver, if you like, for $5 or $10 a month, being exec producer for the price of a couple of posh coffees. Go to patreon.com/EV News Daily. Well, I mentioned some of the big world car awards this year, and one that you were right to point out I missed, and that was the Hyundai Insta slash Casper, as it's known in its home market, Insta anywhere else, at the New York International Auto Show, where they were announcing the winners for the World Car Awards. I totally forgot to mention that the little Hyundai Insta has been named the World Electric Vehicle of the Year. So I mentioned the Kia EV3, my current crush, my current probably recommendation to anybody that wants a 30-something thousand pound or euro car that is not too big, not too small. Got loads of options. You can get bigger battery, smaller battery, and a range of techs in terms of the trims. I think the Kia EV3 is pretty much nailed on a great choice, unless you want to start going into the arguments, oh, well, yes, but Tesla values are dropping faster than the market at the minute for various reasons, and so you can get a stellar deal on a Tesla, and I would totally agree. If you don't mind driving one of those, then yes, you can get some good deals on used EVs, but in terms of a new EV, I do think the Kia EV3 is fantastic value, if you look at the monthly pricing as well. But the little Hyundai Insta, which is a segment smaller, has won the World Electric Vehicle. So the Kia EV3 was the World Car of the Year, the Insta is the World Electric Car of the Year, which I don't know how I missed it. 96 automotive journalists from 30 countries voting in a sealed ballot, and I like the little Casper slash Insta. It'll do about 230 miles on its 50 kilowatt hour battery. It'll do 10 to 80 in about 30 minutes. It's very practical for daily use. You can also use it for long trips if you don't mind loading it up with the family occasionally. It is a small vehicle, but I think it has a really appealing design, all the tech inside it. If you've driven a Hyundai or a Kia, it might feel long in the tooth, or it might feel familiar. I guess there's, you know, maybe two sides of the same coin there, and it's pretty fun to drive. All right, let's move on. The second generation Jeep Compass has, or will be, unveiled in Europe soon. Jeep has unveiled that the new Compass will have several powertrains, including plug-in hybrid and fully electric. A camouflage prototype of the new all-electric Jeep Compass was recently seen in Italy. That's ahead of its global launch. While many design details are obviously kept secret because of the camouflage, we do see some more details now on the pure BEV version. Key design elements, they had a faux grille in piano black, some nice rectangular LEDs as the headlights, and the front bumper has a cooling intake with some active flaps. So that suggests they're thinking about improving aerodynamics and cooling the battery and those components when you need to, and not when you don't, which does help with a little bit of extra range. The new Jeep Compass also has a flatter roof compared to the current model's sloping design. The side profile features new alloy wheels and a straight belt line, making the vehicle look longer than before. Earlier teaser photos showed a redesigned tail light shape with new C-shaped LED elements and some big Jeep branding as well. How are they building it? Well, the new Jeep Compass sits on top of the architecture known as STLA for Stellantis, Stellantis Medium platform. Various powertrains and configurations can come off of that. We look forward to finding out more about the Jeep Compass. Now, let's talk about Nissan speeding up production of the all-electric Juke. Now, the Juke is a massive seller here, by the way. In fact, Nissan do really well in the UK. The Japanese brand is made in the northeast, somewhere called Sunderland, massive plant where the Leaf was made as well. And those vehicles, the Leaf, the Juke, the Qashqai is the big seller, do really well here. And Nissan is looking to speed up production of the Juke, even though the relationship is cooling somewhat with their former partners, former alliance partners. They still are obviously shareholders together with Renault, just not as tight-knit as it was in the Carlos Ghosn days. The new crossover will use parts from Renault's updated Twingo, and the new Nissan Juke will have an LFP pack, lithium iron phosphate, to keep production costs low, and the price needs to be somewhere around £20,000 or €22,000. Of course, small cars are easy to make with a small combustion engine. Those supply chains have been in place for decades and the prices have come down. EVs are still so new that this is interesting territory. How do we make small EVs on a small platform that serve the job of being a small city car, but just like a petrol or, you know, small petrol or diesel, don't get so many small diesels anymore, that fad has gone, but small petrols that can occasionally do a long run, and that means having enough range to hop between DC fast chargers and not DC fast charging ridiculously slow. There are, of course, higher costs of making small city cars, and that's all being addressed. So Renault adopting a strategy pretty much like Stellantis, actually standardizing parts, things like windscreens, doors, door structures, anything that is not really a differentiator between models, but trying to standardise them. Of course, then Nissan will take that Renault technology, give it the Nissan look, but the engineering will a lot of be done by Renault's Ampere division. Well, last year, Nissan's then CEO, who is no longer serving in that job, said Nissan had asked Ampere to explore the development of an A-segment car for Europe, aka Nissan Juke. With Ampere, he said, "We are targeting a very short development time. This car will deliver the convenience and advanced functionality that customers expect in a small-sized EV at an affordable price." That's the one thing about a Nissan, is you can't afford to make it massively expensive. Certainly not on the monthly deals as well. Let's move on. Chevrolet, GMC and Cadillac are adding streaming video service to services, easy for me to say, to their electric vehicles. Drivers can now access things like Amazon Prime Video and Tubi and Max during charging stops. Of course, this doesn't work when the car is moving for safety reasons. Go to your Google Play Store and have a look at the section that says Pastime While Parked. Users can play games with the Google Chrome browser, things like Angry Birds, initially expected for models like the Cadillac Optiq. Chevrolet announcing that the streaming will also be available for its existing electric vehicles during the Blazer EV SS launch. They mentioned this. While a spokesperson didn't specify which models get the update, you would think all of them, wouldn't you? All of them on the no longer called Ultium platform would pretty much have the same basic software architecture. Streaming video options only accessible when the car is stationary, and Chevrolet plans to release a broader entertainment update by perhaps even the end of this month, with a trend towards in-car entertainment, making your car somewhere that you can not only use to get places, but also pass time while charging. But also, you know, those of us that have partners and kids probably spend a fair bit of time waiting in the car for various reasons, either waiting for a kid's activity to finish or waiting for something. And so passing the time rather than staring at our phones all the time on the tiny screen, using our cars for that, which has been an increasing trend. Let's move on. China and China's Ministry of Information, Industry and Information Technology, that's it, has banned automakers from using the phrase full self-driving in ads. Now, this is obviously aimed at Tesla. They've also widened it now to phrases like smart driving and autonomous driving. So for a long time, China had no rules about what you could say and couldn't say in advertising this. A month or so ago, maybe 6 weeks, Tesla began officially, they got the nod from China. You can't just do it like in America or, you know, California, where the rules say, put something on the road and then, you know, we'll decide if it's safe. Europe is a bit more like the aviation industry. So if you want to put something on the road, like autonomy in Europe, you have to get approval first. And of course, China, with its top-down approach, requires an altogether more sympathetic way of working with regulators there, or that just should be the government. But Tesla got the green light to give it a go. And then within 2 weeks of rolling out full self-driving and those videos appearing online of cars turning at traffic lights when they shouldn't, almost hitting cyclists, and on social media in China, of what has taken perhaps 10 years for American regulators to grapple with and have meetings and think, should we allow the phrase full self-driving? Because it isn't really full and it doesn't really self-drive all of the time. China took 2 weeks to go, well, you're not calling it that. So Tesla has had to stop using the phrase full self-driving. And now China has gone one step further. And during a meeting with 60 automaker representatives on April 16th, 3 days ago, a transcript of the meeting was shared with Reuters. China now says, yeah, that's made us realize you can't use phrases like full self-driving or smart driving or autonomous driving if your car is not fully autonomous. Now, there was also, following the Tesla ban of using that phrase, a fatal incident with a Xiaomi SU7, and it really reached, I would say, far and wide in China. I didn't really cover it on this podcast, but I was watching the media coverage. It was three young college girls in a Xiaomi SU7, and so you've got that story there of a car crash. It was an EV crash. It involved autonomy. I don't recall if there was a fire, but of course if there was, that ticks a box as well in the kind of horrible clickbait landscape that we live in media. You know, it's three young girls driving, I think heading to like a college party or something, or an event. And so an awful, awful event, and because of that, China just cracked down really, really quickly. And so the vehicle hit a cement pole at about 60 miles an hour or 100 Ks, and it was the ADAS system that was in operation at part of that journey. Whether the driver was actually in control at the end, whether it switched off or not, we don't know. But the ministry, they're saying, you can't use these phrases. And China cracking down in only the way that China can do, like I say, in a top-down approach of like, right, you can use phrases, but nothing that implies the system does more than it does. And I wonder if that's a generational thing as well. Like, I don't have a problem with the phrase full self-driving because I know Teslas don't full self-drive. I would know I'd have to keep my hands on the wheel. It's going to do something stupid at some point, whether that is phantom braking when you go underneath the shadow of a tree or whatnot. So, and I'm ready for that. I wonder, because this was a, you know, young generation, young girls in China that are used to technology, they've grown up with trusting technology. And if the phraseology around autonomy and electric vehicles implies the cars do more than they really do, I wonder if there's a younger generation that trusts technology more than I do. I'm in my 40s, but still, maybe it's a generational thing where they think, oh, cool, now we can just take our hands off the wheel. I don't know. It's a horrible situation that happened there. But either way, China's gone, right, no more of that then, thank you. Because of the way that China run things. And that's your podcast, halfway done. Part one in the books. We'll take a break. We'll come back and do part two in a moment. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Now, let's talk about one of those sub-brands that may be working its way across Western markets, and that is NIO's sub-brand Firefly. And the Firefly brand, the more affordable vehicle under that, is going to be a compact EV, marking a change from NIO's earlier brand, Onvo. The Onvo L60 was sold through exclusive standalone stores, a whole new dealership chain. I've talked about this before, particularly with the Chinese brands. They're just launching these sub-brands. But rather than having them all in one dealership, like a Stellantis dealership would be, though I've got one near me in Branksome in Poole, and it's all the Stellantis brands, and you can walk in and you can, whether you're shopping for a Fiat or a Citroen, it's all in one building. China was rolling out these independent dealer networks for all of these various sub-brands, and I don't think they're going to survive. I mean, they might do, but I think there's going to be a survival of the fittest, and people are going to be, those that are more trusting or just believing, going in, being like, oh, cool, here's a, you know, Chinese brand called, you know, a Firefly or an Onvo, whatever, rather than walking into the NIO dealership. Because NIO's, you know, or a BYD dealership, that's a bigger thing. And sub-brands might come and go, but actually having a whole dealership chain based around a Chinese brand sub-brand just seems a stretch too far for me. I may be wrong, but NIO's director of brand experience sharing some 3D images showing that the Firefly sub-brand will be displayed within existing NIO showrooms. And I think that's a really smart move. We don't need a whole new dealership chain for the Firefly sub-brand. And they're saying, actually, we'll roll this in. There are others in China. Let me think of a good example. Maybe Chang'an, maybe a good one, that sort of rolling out these sub-brands and hold dealership chains in, you know, Asia and Australia and whatnot under their own name. And I just think, that doesn't seem sustainable to me. But what do I know? I'm just an idiot podcaster. Now let's talk about Cadillac EVs attracting younger customers. Well, back in 2015, if you go back 10 years, the average Caddy buyer was 58 years old. Don't get the brand here, but I must admit, from the outside, Cadillac seems like something that a 58-year-old would probably go and buy. Well, the VP of Global Cadillac says the age has now dropped. Not massively, but only by about 4 years. The new Cadillac IQ, Cadillac's electric full-size SUV, is attracting younger buyers as well. Average buyer of that is 48. And they think that's a good thing, because moving the brand slightly younger says they, you know, can get some more repeat business before they pop their clogs. They didn't say that. I added that. But since becoming head of Cadillac in 2023... John Roth aims to restore the brand to what he says is the standard of the world. Cadillac reshaping its brand for luxury consumers, but not being something that is very, very upscale, only for people with, you know, heading towards retirement with a lot of spare money. Of course, the new vehicles, the Escalade IQ and the IQL, the long version, and the Optiq and the Vistiq joining the Lyriq. In the US, Cadillac sales were up almost 20%. Overall, and 21% in the first quarter of the year. Well, Stellantis and Leap Motor are assembling vehicles together under the Leap Motor logo, and they are now making vehicles in Malaysia. Assembly will take place in Stellantis' plant in Kedah, with the first model being the not the small little T03, the 15 grand car that we get, but the C10, the larger, sort of, well, it costs us about 30 grand SUV. They'll serve the Malaysian market and be exported to other Asian countries and right-hand drive versions as well. Leap Motor is a fast-growing brand that Stellantis has invested heavily in, and Leap Motor International is the joint venture between those two companies that is 51-49 Stellantis owned, so not technically a Chinese company. But not technically, like I say. Let's move on. TerraWatt Infrastructure has opened its first charging station for medium trucks and heavy-duty trucks in California, reports Electrek. Located in Rancho Dominguez, it is 12 miles, or about 20 k's north of the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. It's a private site serving multiple trucking fleets and supporting electric truck operators for the container ports. Initial clients include Dreaded Trucking, Height Logistics, PepsiCo, Southern Counties Express, and TradeLink Transport. The facility has 20 DC fast charging stalls that are pull through, and also for bobtail trucks as well, with a 7 megawatt total capacity. They're charging about 125 trucks daily. So not too far from the ports. Neha Palmer, who is the CEO and co-founder of TerraWatt, saying that this launch underscores the growing collaboration in the trucking industry between enterprises, shippers, carriers, and charging infrastructure providers. Tesla are next, and they are boosting discounts on the Cybertruck in North America. Tesla is increasing the discounts on their Cybertruck inventory in Canada and the United States. They've got some Foundation Series, which they've not sold as new vehicles for many months now. Some of these vehicles are 6 months old, sitting on Tesla lots, and they want to shift those. And so, of course, they also don't get the federal tax credit. So Tesla doing what the kind of Hyundais and Kias of the world do. When you don't get the tax credit, they're basically matching it themselves or more. Canadians can get the Foundation Series Cybertruck in Cyber Beast trim, which, like I say, has been out of production for a long time now, but they're just some unsold ones. That's a $17,000 Canadian discount, which brings it down to $150,000 Canadian. Discounts on the all-wheel drive bring it down to $124,000 Canadian. That's maybe a 10% reduction compared to February's 5% reduction. So increasing discounts there for those that are waiting for some cheaper Cybertruck pricing, according to Drive Tesla Canada. Now, I will let you know about a little story I told you about earlier in the week, Fisker's Ocean. The electric vehicles that are, again, from the company that went bust. There's been a bunch of them, 8 of them, sitting on the side of the road in Nottingham, in the UK, because the importer was holding them for Fisker. Fisker went bust. There's obviously the company that then the sort of insolvency proceedings that go on. So somebody owns these vehicles, but the importer put them on the public road and went, well, we want nothing to do with them anymore, so we've relinquished any responsibility. The council just can't go and move them because they're legally parked there. However, they were just parked against the hedges in a quiet street that nobody really noticed apart from local residents, and liquidators weren't doing anything about them. It appeared in the UK's Daily Mail and I think The Sun, which were sort of two big newspapers back in the day. I mean, no one reads a newspaper anymore, so their circulations are dwindling, but they still get some press and whatnot when it appears in the national newspapers. And so that story rolled around this week, which I reported on, and now the liquidators have moved those vehicles. There are 419 Ocean EVs registered in the United Kingdom, of which these eight are obviously part of. By moving the vehicles to a public road, the dealership said, hey, not on our hands anymore. The liquidators have got a lot on their plates. They ignored them. However, the vehicles will now be auctioned off to get some, recover some value for those that are owed money by Fisker. Would you buy one at auction? I mean, the battery itself has got some inherent value. There's two Fisker Oceans that fly around here. I've never spoken to the owners. But would you buy the vehicle at what price? You've almost got to then just write it off, haven't you? In your head. And be like, whatever it's worth, it's worth. Now, Polestar are next. And Polestar are going to cut some of its UK R&D staff because we actually designed the Polestars here in the UK. There is the park in Nuneaton in Warwickshire. There's also the facility in Coventry. And they've been very busy making the Polestar 5. But of course, now that Polestar 5 production process is coming to an end, that program is maturing, you just don't need as many people to design new models if that new model has now been designed. And so they think there are going to be some engineering roles going for Polestar in the UK. But very interesting, that vehicle. Obviously, it's a negative story because there's going to be some voluntary redundancies offered. But it does mean that program is reaching a climax, which if you want the new Polestar 5 is a data point, I guess, that program is moving on. And the vehicle must be ready then. Polestar is committed to R&D in the UK and Sweden, they say. And if you are travelling this weekend on the Easter weekend, GridSurf putting out some data on when and where you should charge. A surge of 19 million trips across the UK this Easter, according to the RAC. The end of the school holidays as well. My two little rugrats are going back in to school and nursery on Tuesday, so the Easter holidays will be over. GridServe say there'll be a 10% rise in usage of the GridServe high-powered chargers, and they say the busiest time is going to be between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. each day. So avoid those 2 hours over lunchtime. They said if you can charge earlier or later, at 9 a.m. or maybe 3 p.m, it's 20% less crowded, according to their data. GridServe also introducing its electric highway code to include guidelines about how to charge, how not to block a bay, not unplugging other vehicles, and the best times to charge your vehicle as well. So there you go. Avoid lunchtime, according to GridServe, if you're travelling over the long bank holiday weekend. If where indeed you live, you are observing the Easter holidays. We have a 4-day weekend here, national holidays, and so lots of places closed, but lots of places also open to cater for people looking for stuff today. And that's your podcast for today. Thanks to our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, and Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, and Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.